इति ते भर्तृनिर्देशम् आदाय शिरसा धृताः प्रजानां कदनं विदधोः कदनप्रियाः इति ते भर्तृनिर्देशम् आदाय शिरसा धृताः तथा प्रजानां कदनं विदधुः कदनप्रियाः इति ते भर्तृनिर्देशम् आदाय शिरसा धृतः तथा प्रजानां कदनं विदधुः कदनप्रियाः
आदाय शिरसा तथा प्रधानं कदनं
विदधुः कदनप्रियाः
इति ते भर्तृनिर्देशम्
आदाय
शिरसा धृताः persecution. Vidadhuhu, executed. Kadanapriyaha,
who are expert in persecuting others.
Translation. Thus, the demons, being fond of disastrous activities, took Hiranyakashipu's instructions on their heads with great respect and offered him obeisances. According to his directions, they engaged in envious activities directed against all living beings. Please repeat. Thus the demons,
being fond of disastrous activities,
took Hiranyakashipu's instructions
on their heads
with great respect
and offered him obeisances.
According to his directions,
they engaged
in envious activities
directed against all living beings.
Directed against all living beings.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Founder, Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and Savior of the Modern World, Srila Prabhupada, E.J. No. The followers of demoniac principles, as described here, are thoroughly envious of the general populace. In the present day, scientific advancement exemplifies such envy. The discovery of nuclear energy has been disastrous to people in general, because demons all over the world are manufacturing nuclear weapons. At the time that Srila Prabhupada wrote this, India was manufacturing nuclear weapons. Since that time, now we know that North Korea has nuclear weapons, and Iran has nuclear weapons. Of course, we know several years ago, Pakistan also has developed a nuclear weapon. So the purport is definitely relevant. Let's continue. The word kadanapriya is very significant in this regard. The demoniac persons who want to kill the Vedic culture are extremely envious of the feeble citizens. And they act in such a way that ultimately their discoveries will be inauspicious for everyone. Jagatao Ahitaha. In the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita fully explains how the demons engage in sinful activities for the destruction of the populace. Om Jnana Timanam Tasya Jnanam Jina Shilakaya Chakshuran Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yudapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscham Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tatta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Iti te bhartra nirdesham adaya shirasadhritaha Tatha prajanam kadanam vidadhuhu kadana priyaha. Thus the demons, being fond of disastrous activities, took Hiranyakashipu's instructions on their heads with great respect and offered him obeisances. According to his directions, they engaged in envious activities directed against all living beings. There are two things that are significant in Srila Prabhupada's explanation of this verse. The first, he makes sure that he clarifies at the very outset that people who follow demoniac principles are thoroughly envious of everyone else. To some degree, we all follow demoniac principles because all you have to do is nothing and you'll be trained up in that mode. What mode is it? Tamoguna. At best, Rajaguna, sometimes, but generally Tamoguna. I think I mentioned the other day, 75% of the population of Punjab that is under 30 years of age is addicted to heroin. That means that the entire next generation will be thoroughly steeped in Tamoguna. And anyway, you can give that some thought. But this is demoniac. Somebody's bringing all those drugs in, somebody is selling those drugs, and somebody's taking those drugs. And all of them are in these lower modes of material nature. So, Srila Prabhupada then, the two things, first thing he talks about is envy. And then the second thing he talks about is the word kadana. Do you have this word kadana in Tamil? No. In fact, we don't have it in Sanskrit either. And it's not in any other language that I know. It's not in the dictionary. At least it's not in the standard Sanskrit dictionary. Which brings up a very interesting point that is worth digressing a little bit. We don't know anything. And therefore, we don't know what words mean. We think that we get the definitions of words from dictionaries, but this is wrong, because one has to consider, where do dictionaries get the meaning, get the definitions of words? The person who compiles a dictionary is called a lexicographer. These people have to substantiate their definition with reference to previous authorities. In exactly the same way that Vaishnavas who make some assertion about spiritual life are expected to substantiate or corroborate their assertion with reference to previous authorities. Are you getting my drift? In other words, Guru Sadhu Shastra Vakya Chite Te Koriya Aikya. It doesn't matter whether you're a mundane scholar or a devotee, you have to hear from authority, because this is where knowledge comes from. So we don't get the idea of what a word means just because it's in the dictionary, because sometimes they aren't in the dictionary, as in this case. So how do we know what is kadana mean? We know from, as they say in the commentaries, Swami Charanat. We know from the lotus feet of Sridhar Swami. We have to depend on our predecessor acharyas for everything. Sometimes we find in Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada defines words in a curious way that are a little bit different than the way the word is usually used or the way that the word is in the dictionary. And this is why. We also find throughout, for example, Bhakti-rasamrita Sindhu, whenever Srila Rupa Goswami, in particular, when he's talking about the qualities of Lord Krishna, first he gives a definition. What is that quality? And then he expands on how Krishna displays that quality. This is scientific. This is academic integrity, you can say. So, in a similar way, I mentioned already that Prabhupada is talking about two things mainly in this purport. One of them is envy, and then the other one is kadana. What does kadana mean? According to the acharyas commenting on this verse, kadana means kashta. Do you have this word in Sanskrit or in Tamil? Yeah, so you know what kashta means. But it means more than that. Srila Viraraghava Acharya of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, in his commentary, he gives us a twofold definition of kadana. He says the first definition is bhuta droha, to be envious of others, other living beings, other creatures. Not just bhuta means creatures, of course, but literally bhuta means anything that's created. So we can be envious of the inanimate world as well. That's called bhuta droha. And the other thing is kashta, to give trouble to others. Or as Prabhupada very insightfully translates in his word-for-word synonyms, Persecuting. It's a very significant word. We'll return to it in a moment. So, in this way, hearing from the Acharyas, what do these words mean? We can process what we're hearing this morning. So how do we know what is the definition of envy? Does anyone know? This is something Srila Prabhupada says from time to time. I'll give you a hint. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find this word, dharma projita kaita vatra paramo nirmat saranam satam. So, matsara. Sridhar Swami in his commentary on that verse has defined matsara for us. Does anyone know this? Okay. No. Okay. It's a little bit esoteric, I suppose.
Matsara is like para sukha dukhi.
You're very warm. His exact words are, what is it? Parotkarsh asahan. Inability to tolerate somebody else shining. Utkarsha. Utkarsha means you come up in the world. You shine. You display some excellence. And parotkarsha means somebody else is doing that. And parotkarsha asahana. When this becomes intolerable to you, that means you are envious. So this is what we find throughout the material world. Practically speaking, everyone is guilty of this, including us. We're envious also. We don't like it when somebody else shines because we want to always be the main thing happening. We want to be the Supreme Lord. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada now says in the beginning, the followers of demoniac principles, as described here, are thoroughly envious of the general populace. How much meaning can you pack into one sentence? I mentioned the other day, Srila Prabhupada said when he wrote these books, he chose every word very, very carefully. Therefore, if and when we edit these books, we also have to be very careful. So, in the present day, Srila Prabhupada elaborates, scientific advancement exemplifies such envy. Why is that? I want to hear some audience feedback. Why is it that Prabhupada says, and mind you, before Srila Prabhupada, nobody would dare to say this, and when Srila Prabhupada was here, nobody else was saying it, and even now that Srila Prabhupada is no longer physically present, I'm not hearing very many people saying this. Srila Prabhupada was thoroughly fearless in attacking those who were actually guilty of bhutadroha, doing harm, envying other living entities, and therefore doing them harm. We should consider this very carefully. Literally, the last word of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad is this famous verse. Yasya deve para bhaktir yatha deve tatha gurau. You have to have as much faith in your spiritual master as you have in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an important thing. And Srila Prabhupada illustrated this on one occasion. I think it was Rameshwar Prabhu. He was at one time the in charge of the BBT, at least in North America. So one reporter was interviewing Srila Prabhupada, newspaper reporter. And he asked Srila Prabhupada, how do you know what to write in all these books? Because Srila Prabhupada very proudly used to remind people that we have 60 volumes of books translated from Sanskrit literature, very authoritatively, five-part translation, we all know. So the reporter asked Srila Prabhupada this question, and Srila Prabhupada nonchalantly answered, Krishna tells me what to write. So his disciple started getting nervous, and he volunteered an explanation for the reporter that God is within the hearts of all living beings, and he supplies the intelligence to us to put things in perspective how to understand what to do, what not to do. We know this. We have a word for this in English. It's called conscience. If you do something wrong, you know it. Somebody tells you. They call this the still small voice. There's a little voice inside of you that says, no, no, this is not right. You see, most of the time we ignore that, and therefore Paramatma, he speaks very softly, and he doesn't often repeat himself. Because yate chasi tatakuru, you know, rehenedo, as we say in Hindi. If we want to do some nonsense, he's going to let us do that. The spiritual master is more kind than that. Spiritual master will get on your case. And so does the Shastra. This is an interesting point, just to digress on my digression. That the Dharma Shastra in particular serves a role very similar to that of the spiritual master. How is that? Because it takes abstract philosophical principles and it translates them into ground level reality in a very practical way, so that there's absolutely no question about what to do and what not to do. That's exactly why Krishna says in chapter 16, to which Srila Prabhupada has referred, tasmat shastra pramanam te karya karya vijanataha. You have to discriminate what to do and what not to do on the basis of shastra vidhi, whatever the shastra enjoins. We are animals to the extent that we have not assimilated dharma thoroughly. We've mentioned that already. And what do you do with an animal? Just like in Vrindavan where I live, there are too many monkeys. That's something also that is worth consideration. Where did all the monkeys in Vrindavan come from? I haven't seen any monkeys here. I went to the hospital the other day with Chitta Haripubu and I saw two or three monkeys on a wall there. Those are the first monkeys I've seen in all of South India. There's not that many of them. So why are there too many monkeys in Vrindavan everywhere? And those who visit Vrindavan, you know, they steal your glasses. Now they've been trained up, they say, by the local children. We don't really know, but they say like this, that the local children have trained them up to steal things more valuable than glasses also. They will steal small purses. And this actually happened to one devotee I know. She had her purse. It was the kind of purse that had a little zipper in it. So you would think it was very safe. It was around her shoulder. The monkey, in one flash, he leapt two or three buildings over. They're so quick. They're as quick as the mind, actually, these monkeys. They resemble the mind in many ways, but that's one of them. So this monkey, he jumped over and grabbed the purse and then went up to a rooftop where he was intelligent enough to realize, I'm safe here. Paramatma gives them that much intelligence, the animals. And what did he do with the purse? He unzipped the purse. He took out all the contents of the purse. He opened the boxes very carefully. He found whatever was in there of interest to him. And he enjoyed. Bhupujay, as we say in Sanskrit. He plundered the contents. So you can imagine, if you have, say, several thousand rupees, if you have maybe your passport or your Aadhaar card or whatever. So it's becoming very dangerous, but we shouldn't digress too much. Okay. So monkeys in Vrindavan, they're there because they've committed so many offenses. They may probably have been yogis in their last time, in the last lifetime. Vaishnavas who became sahajyas perhaps through bad association. Goswamis who were secretly engaging in sinful things. So many possibilities are there. Now I've forgotten how I got on this topic.
Why there are so many monkeys in Vrindavan?
We're animals. This is my point. So Dharma Shastra is working on the assumption that we are animals And animals understand just like monkeys. If ever you go out of your house or come from the market with a plastic bag in hand, it's understood that you are prey for the monkeys. They know what is a plastic bag. They will get you. Therefore, you have to take a stick. Because if they know nothing else, they know what that stick means. So this is animal. Therefore, we call it Shastra. Shasthatu. Shasthatu means to chastise. Therefore, what is the word that we have for weapon? Shastra. Very similar. You see? Shastra is a weapon by which the animal mind that has misled us for so many years is beaten into submission. And I said in the beginning, this is a very similar function that the spiritual master performs. Just like somebody many, many years ago, this is decades ago, one devotee had written a cartoon. And there's a picture of one devotee. He's chanting japa. And he's thinking that I've become very advanced. And in his mind, he's experiencing all sorts of ecstasies. And he's like, and there's flowers all around him, and he's hearing beautiful music, and he's chanting, and he's in deep in the mellows of Vrajaras, as we say. Then in the next frame, a big foot comes down and squishes him. Because who does that foot belong to? That is the lotus foot of the spiritual master. He puts us in our place. You see? Very similar to the Shastra. For example, in the, what is it? I think it's in the Mundaka Upanishad. The Lord is described there as Prana, one of the names of Lord Vishnu. And someone, many, many, many years ago, someone asked one sadhu a question that how can I see Lord Krishna, what is that verse? Vamshi vibhushita karanna vanira da abha? Something like that. Madhusudan Saraswati wrote. Krishna standing with his flute to his lips in threefold bending form in underneath a kadam tree in Vrindavan, surrounded by gopis and, you know, just nectar. And the answer was that I should think that before you can see Krishna in that form, you have to see him in the form of prana, which the Mundaka Upanishad describes as an upraised thunderbolt weapon ready to strike you dead. We have to see Krishna in this form. Unless you kill the false ego first, you will remain envious, and you will therefore necessarily engage in all sorts of unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world, as Prabhupada has alluded to in his purport here. So this is the this is a significant thing. And particularly he targets the scientific community because the scientific community is trying to do things now like, well, with recent court case, Monsanto Corporation was defeated by one very diligent Rao who wanted to make sure that they're not going to carry out their agenda here. Just like last year, I remember, there was big uproar about this Jallikattu. So, you know, these foreign NGOs are making a big stink about it because in their perception, for what that's worth, they feel that this is violence to animals. And so they want to destroy a thousand-year-old tradition that we can read about in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Where? In the 10th canto, where? Yeah, when Krishna controlled all those seven bulls. So Namnajit, no? The same thing. It's the same thing. So, that's one example. Monsanto is trying to terminate your seeds. They call these terminator seeds. It reminds me of the fourth canto description regarding Prithu Maharaja's reign. When, again, that all the grains in the world were confiscated and held, and Prithu Maharaj had to come and do something about it. So these demons are doing things like this. They're actually trying to control the weather as well. They are controlling the weather, which means that they're ruining the weather, but it's not according to their plan. they're trying to tweak Mother Nature in such a way that they can fulfill their desires, but actually it just ends up making a bigger mess. And this is what Prabhupada has concluded his purport. The 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita fully explains how the demons engage in sinful activities for the destruction of the populace. So these two definitions we have of envy, of kashta is one of them, and bhuta droha is the other one. This is coming from Viragavacharya. You will notice, if you read very sensitively, that Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport assimilate both of these meanings and convey the gist of the message to us. When we are envious, we have to harm others. We can only harm others. And this process of everyone only harming others through envy destroys this world that we try to live in peacefully. This is why you cannot live in this world peacefully, Srila Prabhupada told us yesterday. It is impossible, unless and until you deal with the root cause of this destruction, which is envy. Envy. So, nuclear energy, he's talking about, now I mentioned already, this is proliferating now. Srila Prabhupada, used to be written, I think, in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that the demons are very, that no demons can prolong your lifespan indefinitely, but they've created so many things that can shorten your lifespan, like nuclear weapons. Also, if you go to a hospital, anything can happen. So many stories. But this is also increasing in recent years. It's even in America, which is supposed to have super nice hospitals. People get all kinds of infections in the hospitals. Last year, Indradumna Swami had an infection, septic fever. Septic infection somehow he got. From the hospital. So this happens. So the things that are supposedly going to make our lives easier, they actually make our lives harder. Computers, we all know, they work fine when they work. But when they don't work, or automobiles, they get you somewhere very fast until it breaks down. Then you've got 3 tons of dead metal and you don't know what to do with it. So, anyway, kadana. This is called kadana. And we don't know what kadana means, but our acharyas have told us. Now, another thing is this. The word is used here twice in the verse. One of them, kadanam vidadu. Vidadu. They executed, that they were engaged in persecuting. Who were they persecuting? Living beings in general, but especially, who did Hiranyakashipu instruct them to target, particularly? Huh? The Brahmanas, the Vaishnavas, the pious people. You see? So this is going on also now. There are certain things that you can say and you'll be fine. But if you say other things, even no matter how authorized they are, you will be persecuted. We've seen this. Even in Vrindavan, I've seen this last year. So this is the problem. Kadana. They are engaged in persecution because they are followers of demoniac principles. And therefore they're envious. I mentioned the other day, a person who's wise is always envied by a person who's unintelligent or uneducated, perhaps. A person who is wealthy is always envied by a person who has less. Someone who's chaste is always envied by those who are unchaste. You see? This is coming from Chanakya Pandit. Something that Prabhupada quoted quite a bit, actually. It's a very interesting point as an aside here. These are not exactly Vaishnava Shastras, and yet we find that Srila Prabhupada is quoting from them almost constantly. For example, where do we find in Srimad Bhagavatam mention of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending as being animal concerns instead of human concerns? Does anyone know offhand? Certainly it's in the purports, but where in the text of the Srimad Bhagavatam will you find this information? Nobody knows.
Huh?
Okay, but not really. Nice try. No, that's also, you're close, but not exactly there yet. You can see his calculator working in his head.
Lokevya Vayamishamadya Seva?
Sorry?
Lokevya Vayamishamadya Seva.
All these, yeah, you can get warm in many places in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You will not find this instruction explicit because it's not in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Where does it come from?
Hitopadesh.
Not Chanakya Pandit. It comes from Hitopadesh. Chanakya Pandit is also not inventing these things himself. He's just reiterating what is ancient tradition. In many cases, they're traced to this or that Purana, you will find them. And if there's no tracing out of the Shastra, then still it's authoritative. Why? Because this is what the Shishtas have done. I mentioned the other day, this is Shishtachara, also sometimes known as Aitihyam. And that's something that Krishna himself lists in the 11th canto as an authority equal in status to Shatra Praman. So tradition is very important. And what we can learn from tradition is also very important. And in this case, we can see that throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, he's adopting traditional sources and sharing their wisdom with us, and endorsing it very clearly, and in effect instructing us to follow this. So Hitopadesh tells us, Ahara Nidra Bhayamaitanam Cha. Does that sound familiar? Many Indians, they still know this verse, because it is Chalita, as they say. In Bengali, it's prevalent in society. And I mentioned already the other day, the end of the verse, conclusion of that verse, dharmasya hina pashupi samana. Without dharma, you are an animal. To the extent that you don't have dharma, you are an animal. And how do you discipline an animal? You beat the animal. This is what the Shastra does, this is what the spiritual master does. You see? We're not going to actually beat people or kill them with weapons. There are some religious fanatics in the world, thoroughly steeped in the mode of ignorance, and that's what they do. If you don't accept my interpretation of my scripture, then I'm going to kill you on the spot. This happens. We know regularly in terrorist attacks, they ask someone to recite some verse from the Quran, and if he can't do it, they blow him away. You see? This is tamasic faith, an important subject that we don't hear discussed very much because it's too powerful. In the beginning of chapter 17 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna discusses the three modes of faith. Which mode is your faith in? Think about it. Human life is meant for this. We have to discriminate. We're either going up or we're going down or we're going sideways. Those are the only three options. Where is this stated? Chapter 15. Urvam gacchati sattvastha madhye tishthanti rajasaha jaghanya guna vrtistha adho gacchanti tamasaha. You see? We have to transcend the mode of ignorance and also the mode of passion, although it's less destructive than ignorance. Monkeys, I already mentioned. Monkeys are in the mode of ignorance. Only destruction. That's all they do. They don't do anything constructive. Have you noticed? One time I saw, this is a funny story, we were having a BBT, annual BBT meeting, in one of the upstairs offices of the MBT guest house in Vrindavan. For those of you who have been there, you know. On the ground next to the building, there's a big generator. So this generator was virtually right outside of the window downstairs from where we were holding the meeting. So as often happens, and especially North India, we heard a big boom, and then the lights went out. And so somebody looked out the window to see if he could see what happened. And then he looked and he saw that coming stumbling out of the generator, there was a still smoldering and singed black monkey. He was kind of like not stable. It's kind of like you say in Tamil, no NG Tindakuranga. So this monkey, you know, his simian nature, his monkey nature impelled him to do the wrong thing because he was in the world of ignorance. He played with the wrong object and he got zapped for it, you see? So this is why we just have to beat the mind and let it know you don't go there. You see? Mind is like a monkey. You can learn so much. People often ask me, you're living in Vrindavan, can you tell me, what is it like in Vrindavan? They're thinking that I'm going to tell them some rasik story about Krishna coming from behind the Nikunj or something like that. Actually, for us, for those of us who go to Vrindavan and aspire for bhakti, at least if you're following the process of bhakti in Srila Prabhupada's line, you will experience, first and foremost, that Vrindavan is in charge of anartha nivritti. It's like a mirror. And you cannot hide from your anarthas. They will be front and center in your mind, and they will be advertised to everyone around you as well. That is the nature. I should say, that is the mercy of Vrindavan Dham. Because we're animals still, most of us. The residue of 8,400,000 previous lives is still very strong in our minds. This is called, in the fifth canto, Karnamatmaka. And Prabhupada has very brilliantly translated it as, your mind is colored with fruitive activity. Our whole psychological process is colored by this animal residue from so many lifetimes past. So we have to tame that animal first. That is to control the mind. We know, even in Ashtanga Yoga, this is there. First there's Yama, Niyama. And then all the other six stages come after that. Alright, so Kadana. They're engaged in persecuting you if you speak something that is too spiritually pure, something too authorized, something that goes against the flow of the three modes of material nature. They will persecute you. You should accept that. What examples do we see of this in our Shastra? Prahlad Maharaj, his son, his own son. He tried to kill in so many ways. And what does Prabhupada say? Only because his Prabhupada says very poetically, his only flaw was that when he was a devotee of Vishnu. Prahlad. So, Dvauhuta Sardau Lokesmin, Daiva Asura Evacha. There are always two kinds of people in this world. The people who are okay with Vedas and Dharma and that culture, Krishna consciousness, and the people who are not okay with it and who rebel and who try to fight and obstruct. These are the demons and the devotees. Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Daiva Asuras Tat Viparaya. The devotees always act in terms of religious principles, and anybody who opposes that, they are demons. You see? Okay. Persecution, kadana, kashta. So, take it in two ways. Either they are, the final word I wanted to dial on is kadana priya. Means, what does Prabhupada translates it here as? They're expert in persecuting others. But what does the word priya mean, literally? It doesn't mean expert, it means they like to do this. They enjoy this. And sometimes we find that there are people like this. They enjoy smashing us. They enjoy seeing that our missionary activities are frustrated. You see? So these are the kinds of demons that Prabhupada is talking about here. Kadana, they're persecuting those who are too Krishna conscious for their own comfort. Just like, this is a funny one. I saw another cartoon many years ago. It shows an American husband and wife in a church. And in the Christian churches, they come around and they take a collection at some point in the service, at least in the Catholic service, that's what they do. So it shows this process is going on, and when they extend the basket for this couple to donate, the couple is not giving anything. Instead, they're looking very uptight. And then the man holds up a sign, and the sign says, "No bishops in the bedroom." That means they don't like the fact that the Catholic Church, even today, as far as I'm aware, opposes abortion, contraception, sinful things like this. That they want to have all the illicit sex that their mind instructs them to have, and there should be no reaction. And their so-called gurus should not give them any other instruction than the one that they want to hear. You see? This should not happen in ISKCON. It can. Shall I tell you something interesting? In Hyderabad, a few years ago, I was preaching in a program. And someone there told me that, you know, we have this program every week, and we have regular people who are coming, congregational people. They're not necessarily fully committed to Krishna consciousness, but they like it, and they're chanting maybe, and they're reading something. So he said, at one of these programs, one woman raised her hand when they asked the questions. Here no one asks the questions, but in Hyderabad people ask questions. So one woman raises her hand and said, "Is it okay for devotees to have abortions?" Can you believe that? She actually asked this question because these people are not reading Srila Prabhupada's books. That's the only explanation for this kind of question to even arise in such a situation. But Hyderabad has become a particularly sinful place. I don't know why. The Andhra people are so pious otherwise. But there's alcohol shops every 10 feet. Balaji Wine Store. I've seen it. I've actually seen this. And there's, you know, other unmentionable foodstuffs that they're selling every 20 feet. And then the latest thing I heard now is that a busy professional woman can go on her lunch break. She can go and have a lunch break abortion in the doctor's office on her lunch break, so it doesn't interfere with her life too much. You see? So sinful. You know, we have to be so careful. And there's one weapon, I've mentioned this twice already in this class, I'll say it one more time. There is one weapon we have to prevent this from happening to ourselves. And what is that weapon? Okay, that's not incorrect. But what I've mentioned twice so far, think about the meaning of the word weapon and derivative words. Shastra. Shastra Yonadva. Srila Prabhupada very often quotes this sutra from Badarayana. Everything comes from Shastra. And Srila Prabhupada said, books are the basis. Srila Prabhupada criticized his disciples, even 50 years ago, for not reading enough. Now I've seen that this problem has become much worse. People do not read Prabhupada's books seriously. These are the people who wonder whether it's okay. Is it bona fide to get a lunch break abortion? You see? So the only thing that protects us from the mind is the shastra, in the form of shastra. This is how we can beat our mind. If you're not hearing the instructions, how are you going to give those instructions to your mind? What to speak of other people? You have to hear. You have to hear. It's absolutely imperative. Every day. Because think about it. Raise your hand. I want everyone to raise your hand if you do not eat sometimes. One day you can go without eating, right? But do you? No. Every day we eat. Every day we go to sleep, correct? Raise your hand if you didn't go to sleep last night. Yeah, everybody got sleep last night because the music stopped. You see? So we eat every day, we sleep every day, we engage with our family, we engage in security, security procedures, we invest in defense mechanisms, And we call it security nowadays. It's a big issue, especially in IT, security issues. Firewall. That's eating, sleeping, mating, defending. You see? We do these things every day, but do we hear every day? No. Why? Manda sumanda mati. We're not just lazy, we're sumanda mati. We're really, really dull. Is that why we don't have any questions? I hope not. So, this is the thing. Kadana priya, they're actually fond of disturbing other people, these demons. Because if you don't hear for a long time enough, well, you are hearing. That's the thing. Actually, you're always hearing. It's just a question of what you're hearing. If you're not hearing from Srila Prabhupada, you're hearing from somebody else. Are you sure you want to hear from that person? Or from, sometimes it comes impersonally in the form of, say, you know, BBC, India Today, Adi Adi Adi. So we're always hearing something. We, just like we always have faith and we invest our faith somewhere. But where do you invest your faith? What are you hearing? And what are you doing about it? This is the point. In Vrindavan, I have a Pakwaj Guru, Mridanga Guru. So he told me one day regarding sadhana. Sadhana, they also use this word for practice, music practice. He said, you have to ask yourself, am I okay? Why am I okay? Am I not okay? Why am I not okay? This much introspection has to be there. This is what a person who is serious about advancing in spiritual life will do. Am I coming to the morning program every day? Am I coming to all the morning program every day? Unless, I mean, there's always some emergency situation. Am I reading Prabhupada's books every day? Am I taking only prasadam? All of these kinds of things. So Srila Prabhupada very carefully established a society in which there was a social protocol. This is an important point also. And that protocol was, social convention, we can say, was established by Srila Prabhupada. I have seen that in the 40 or 50 years since Srila Prabhupada left, that this social conventions that Srila Prabhupada established for the maintenance and the nourishment of our spiritual advancement, they have gradually been eroded. Why? Because too many people have chosen non-devotional association instead of devotional association. And along with that association comes the ideology that creates and sustains and motivates that association to be godless. And we become contaminated. And we begin to think, well, Prabhupada says this in the Bhagavad Gita, but it's really heavy, so I'm not going to mention it. And therefore, if no one mentions it, what happens? We forget. No one learns it. No one mentions it. No one learns it. Jaise Hindi mein kehte hai ki, bans nahi to bansuri nahi. Means if you have no bamboo, you've got no bamboo flute. So this is the idea. You have to hear the right thing every day, and you have to hear everything. Guru, this is what is implied with this instruction, Guru Mukha Padma Vakva Chite Te Koriya Aikya. Your heart should be, your heart, the situation of your heart, the condition, the sthiti of your heart, it should be created by hearing only from the spiritual master. So this is a very, very important thing. All right, I think we've said enough here, but no one has any questions, so I will end here. And raise your hand if I'm wrong, but okay. Our temple president is here. When all else fails, you can always count on the temple president to write a to pose a token question.
just related to what you said, that we are dull and we are really... I mean, when we see videos of devotees of Prabhupada's time, really they had a spiritual commitment. Mm. So is it this dullness, of course, from progress of Kali Yuga, is it also from the the leaders nowadays are not that.
This is a very.
The question comes from above.
Did everybody hear the question? Has it been translated also? Okay, he said, we're talking about how people in Kali Yuga are dance, Sumanda Mati. And we're talking about how the association is bad. So the association around us, that is to say, the parent society, at least in the West, for sure. So he's also asking, what about the position of the leaders, right? Because how are they involved in this? I mentioned the other day, yet acharati shreshtas tatad evita rojanaha sayatramanam kurte lokas tadanavartate. The other day in Makpelu, I was standing in the doorway of the house where I was staying, and it's in a completely rural area. So there were nothing but fields around, and I saw one old woman walking with a stick surrounded by maybe 10 or 12 goats. And I was thinking about this. It's very easy to control goats because they're not so bright. So then I turned to my host and said, there are people like that too. I pointed out the goats. And I said that there are people like that also. Anything you give them, they're going to accept it unquestioningly. Because manda sumanmati. People in this age are not so smart. Especially if they're not hearing Srila Prabhupada regularly. So, goats. The leaders have to work with this dynamic in mind. They have to make sure that they're exemplary so that whatever they do, the people will follow. They have to do this. So if the leaders themselves are in a diseased condition and not working hard enough to really alleviate that disease, then it causes deviations. There's an interesting story someone recently told me. Every 2 years in Mayapur, before the Mayapur festival, they have this ISKCON Leadership Sangha. And all the leaders of ISKCON, that means not just gurus and brahmanas, but also it means managers and administrators, people who are taking care of practical affairs in the temple. So somehow or other, they gave them a spot quiz without warning them. They took a survey quickly, show of hands. How many people have read all of Srila Prabhupada's books? And how many people are reading every single day? Has anyone else ever heard about this? I forget who told me this now, but recently. And maybe only 20% of the leaders in the ILS meetings had read all of Srila Prabhupada's books. So what kind of policies are they going to implement? That might explain why they're not implementing the social policies that Srila Prabhupada's books endorse, and that Srila Prabhupada himself endorsed, especially in his later years. It's a very, very important, it's a consequential deviation when you stop reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and then pulls another question, so what do we do about it?
What do we do about it? Well,
I mean, individually we can do it.
Yeah, individually is the best thing. Why is that? His question is, what do we do about this? We can work individually, of course, but working individually is actually the best thing. Because, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur and many, many others, it's a common saying in English, example is better than precept. Example is better than precept. You can say so many things. I mentioned this the other day. Those who have children, you know. You can tell them so many things. But at the end of the day, they're only going to do whatever they see you doing, period. There is no question about it. You see? So you have to set the right example yourself, and you have to speak very loudly, and repeatedly, and publicly. There is so that there's no room to hide. This is the point. Just like thieves, when do thieves like to do their dirty work? They like to work under the cover of darkness. And therefore, the persons who are like thieves, they like to keep other people in the dark. They don't want you to know everything. We mentioned this a couple of times already with regard to even demigods can do this. What to speak of those around us? There are places, believe it or not, there are places in ISKCON, I'm told from reliable sources, they don't allow you to read Srila Prabhupada's books unless the person has first read your own books so that he's thoroughly indoctrinated in how to interpret Prabhupada. Because there are such places. This is sinful. It's a sinful thing. Guru Mukha Padma Bhakta Chidete Koriyaitya, Narottam Das Thakur says. In Gaudiya Math, they don't do this Vyas Puja every day, and they don't sing these words every day. But Prabhupada told us to do it because the principle is so absolutely essential. He didn't want us to forget this. He wanted us to sing it every single day so that we can't forget it. You see? Is that okay? Prabhu Gauranga. Gaurbhagavan, sorry.
We were talking about envy.
Yes.
You also mentioned that it is there between among devotees also. If someone sings very well, somebody does something nice than us. So how can that be purified within the process of Krishna bhakti?
Well, the process of Krishna consciousness itself purifies us of that tendency, but we have to follow it. Like I said, am I okay? Why am I okay? Am I not okay? Why am I not okay? We have to be very critical, actually, of ourselves. And look and see where the process is perfect. If there's some problem still, even though I'm following, then maybe I'm not really following that well. We have to look for the flaws in our own hearts. And then we have to work on those. And there's an express route for that, actually. You don't have to waste time yourself looking, because your mind will cheat you in the same way that, you know, so many other people cheat you. So you go to your guru and you ask him. Your guru's not going to cheat you. How am I doing? Then he's going to tell you. He'll be very happy. You see? But the problem is that we don't want to do that because, we know. Paramatma, in the beginning I mentioned, he's going to tell you, don't go there, he's going to blast you. You see? Better go to your friend who's going to, he's going to tell you what you want to hear. You see? See, therefore Rupa Goswami writes in his Nectar of Instruction, or Nectar of Devotion, for those of us who are reading such things, we know. What qualifies as association with devotees? Anybody know? Sadati Ashaya Snigdha. He says, you have to find someone who is in the same category as you are. Somebody you can relate to, as we say in English. Somebody that's similar enough to you that you feel some sort of bond is there. That's important. A person can be very advanced, but if you just don't feel any connection at all, what can you do? You can't take advantage. You see? So, but that's not the only criterion, and it's not even the most important one. The most important criterion is that this person's faith has to be deeper than your own faith. So you have to find somebody that you can relate to, somebody who may be your friend, or somebody that, whatever. But the person's faith has to be deeper than yours, otherwise it's not going to elevate you. You see? Advancement among the three classes of devotees, Kanishtha, Madhyama, Uttama, what is it that actually determines your status in one of those three classes? Your faith. The condition of your faith only. Shastra, the degree of faith, of knowledge you have, that's okay. But it really is only okay because it exemplifies a deeper level of faith that you have invested in reading Prabhupada's books. Those who don't believe that Prabhupada's books have anything to benefit us, they're the ones we're not reading. You see? So faith. The faith has to be stronger. Sometimes what we see instead is that people think, well, association means I go to my friend's house, a few of us come together perhaps, and we take prasad and watch the cricket match. That's not it. That's not going to help you. unless there's a little pinch, you know, you're not going to advance. You have to swim upstream. If you just float, you're going to be carried downstream. There's a famous quote. I don't have a reference, so you can take it or leave it, but Srila Prabhupada said, if you try for outstanding, then you get first class. If you try for first class, then you get third class. If you just try, then you fail. The world is like that. The association is like that. So this is my point. Our leaders, they're trying, but it's not sufficient. Not all of them, many of them. These are the ones who were not able to check the contamination. Is that okay? One more question? Okay. I'm impressed. You have one more?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So probably you were stressing on reading Prabhupada's books.
I'm not stressing. Prabhupada is stressing. None of them Das Thakur is stressing. It's the vast day is stressing. This is the process.
So now for a person who is not read, it looks like a big ocean of books now to read. So is there any systematic...
Yes, there is. You have to contact Vaisheshika and he will train you up. He has a scientific system. He has different plans that you can enroll in. If you want to finish all of Prabhupada's books in 1 year, then you have to read 40 pages per day. For some people, that's just way off the charts. No way am I going to do that. So then he has a slightly more user-friendly plan. You read so many pages a day, one chapter a day, say. Or you can read, you know, so many pages a day, or you can read a verse a day. He's got it all scientifically charted out. He's American. They think like this. Practical. So, you know, you can take the 1 year plan, or you can take the 6 month plan, or you can take the 1 month plan, or you can take the 1 day plan, or you can take the 5 year plan. It's up to you. But do something. Do something. When you take one step in this direction, you will find that Krishna takes 10 steps towards you. The more you read, to discipline yourself to read even one verse in purport every day, you get such a taste from that, if you're serious about it, that you automatically have the motivation to increase. This is how bhakti works. This is the power of bhakti. It's natural to bhakti to do this. Okay? Is that alright? Practical. Here's what I do. I read at least one chapter every day, Bhagavad Gita, after puja, puja path, huh? Traditional thing. And you learn Bhagavad Gita that way. When you need these references, they will be there for you. They will come into your mind even when you think you don't need them. You see? But you have to put it in there. Now, we're supposed to be a missionary movement. You cannot give what you don't have. You haven't even given it to your own mind. How are you going to give it to anybody else's mind? Read, read, read. All right, anything else? You had a question.
Yes. You asked about Prabhupada books, but which books we can...
Prabhupada said four books. Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam. Nectar of Instruction. Chaitanya Charitamritam.
No, for example, Life Comes from Light or Teaching of King Kunti.
All the books are all nice.
Is that Prabhupada books? Or, no, you mean if you ask, we read all of Prabhupada books, these books also include this amount? Or?
That's a good question. Did everybody hear the question? He says, what about books like... Oh, you were telling me the other day, what is the name of this book, you stupid? Dharma... You know, Life Comes from Life. No, Prabhupada published Life Comes from Life. There are some small books that Prabhupada did not write, actually. Instead, his disciples have taken quotes from different places and compiled them like this. Those books. But, you know, it's nothing but Prabhupada speaking. And the very nature of what Prabhupada says is such that you get a comprehensive picture, even in one sentence. You see? They're okay.
No, my question is how much book Prabhupada's write? 10 books or 9 books? Or What is Prabhupada's book?
Well, it's hard to answer that because in different languages they have different standards. There are different books in different languages. You understand?
Can we
Yeah, it can be done on a language by language basis. And you have to talk to somebody in the BDT to do that.
But Prabhupada write in English or it was how much, 9 books or 8 books? Or can we just call this book Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Ishapanishad, what else? But no, if you answer, have you read all Prabhupada books? I don't know even what is all Prabhupada books.
Okay. Well, then you need to invest in purchasing the Vedabase. And there you'll see everything is spelled out very clearly.
If I don't know
or somewhat
the amount of Prabhupada books, I cannot even answer yes or no.
That's correct.
Your question.
That's correct.
But I don't know what is all Prabhupada books.
Correct. It's just like when you want to buy gold, you have to know what gold is. So when you want to read Prabhupada's books, you have to know what they are. That's correct. Any other questions? If not, it's probably getting late. Or you have something?
There was comment? Something linked to that before our dullness and degradation or whatever. One day, Bhaktivinoda Maharaj mentioned, Guru Maharaj mentioned that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at the end of his life, he was lamenting that he started his Namahatas and Kali Chalas took it over.
Mm.
Then you can see next generation is going to start a new movement. And at the end of his life, say, I'm living earlier because.
Have you ever read the Putana essay? It's in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaidhava. I mean, here's something that you really have to appreciate. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was fully aware of the pitfalls of establishing a religious institution. His father was also fully aware and experienced of the same thing. Srila Prabhupada was also fully aware. And all of them, they worked tirelessly to establish religious institutions. Because, you know, I said before, no bans, no bansuri. You don't have a religious institution, how are you going to reach people? You have to have it. But you have to recognize at the same time that your theological authority is not necessarily the same as your managerial authority. And I think it's therefore very significant that in Srila Prabhupada's will, he designated the GBC as the ultimate managerial authority of ISKCON. He did not explicitly say that it was the ultimate theological authority of ISKCON. That's a very, very important point, but it's one that many will not want you to think or ask about too much. Because I have to say, frankly, this is a little controversial perhaps, but in my experience in the last 30 or 40 years of ISKCON, the GBC has never, of its own volition, clarified whether its intended function was primarily to act in a Brahminical capacity or in a Kshatriya capacity. But, according to the implications of Srila Prabhupada's books, it has to choose one or the other, because it cannot do both. Up until the present day, the GBC has kind of, I guess you can say, conveniently changed hats according to expedience. when it's need to execute, we're executive body. When it needs to legislate the teachings, then we, you see? And that's a little dubious. At least it can be questioned, and it probably should be. But you should not expect the initiative for that line of questioning to come from the top, because there's no incentive. So that's a little controversial, but my point is this. You have to have a GBC, and you have to have the institution, and you have to recognize that there are going to be problems. Because what happens? Anybody who preaches, you know this. Whenever you preach anywhere, you attract some people, and you also, in those people, you attract a certain degree of karma and jnana. And therefore, once you have accumulated, as a result of preaching Krishna consciousness, a certain degree of karma and jnana, then you also find that people start coming who are attracted by the karma and jnana and not Krishna. So a manager has to be very sensitive spiritually about that and has to figure out how to manage it. It's not an easy thing to do. Generally, it doesn't work. That has to be said. But we do it anyway because you have to do it. You see? So here's the thing. Even Mark Zuckerberg knows. Everybody know who is Mark Zuckerberg? Well, he's the CEO of Facebook. He knows very well. The best way to reach people and influence people is at a social level. At a social level. Actually, I read an essay in the British press that the Facebook was actually the brainchild of the American CIA. They wanted to do an experiment to find out how many people can we get to willingly just put all their information, personal information, in public space. You can imagine, why would they want to know such a thing? Why would that be important? Of what use would it be to them? You can use your own imagination. But later on, when they were done with that experiment, which means who knows what they've moved on to now, they privatized the entire venture, and that's where Mark Zuckerberg got it from. Okay, so my point is this. He knows that the best way to influence people, to get them to do what you want, is at a social level. And the Shastra also knows that the best way to implement these principles of Krishna consciousness is through society itself. This is a very, very important point, and it's lost on almost everyone. But this is why our acharyas, for the last 100 years, as I mentioned already, while building their institutions, have been pushing on this project of Varnashram Dharma. It's almost as important as having a GBC, because it counterbalances the worst excesses of any member of the society, whether it's a zonal acharya or the GBC of politicals or whatever. You see? The society itself has to be established on a high level of Krishna consciousness through Dharma Shastra and Aitihya, Shishtachara. When you do this, then it's very, very difficult to deviate. Just like here in Salem, you will not find boys and girls, young boys and girls, mixing very freely. In many places they do, in the West, because the management is coming from that background, and they themselves don't have a very deep appreciation of this traditional precedent and why it exists. There was a very famous American preacher, he was a Christian. Is it getting late? You just have to let me know if I'm going too long. His name is Billy Graham, a Christian evangelical. Very, very, he had a long, successful, spotless career. And somebody, you know, he was asked many times, how is it that you've never come into any scandals? Most religious leaders in the world today, you see there's so many scandals. Financial scandals, and so many problems. So he said, I have a policy whenever I'm traveling and preaching. He said, I do not deal with women, period. Somebody else deals with them. You see? He said, one time I came in my hotel room and there was a woman in my bed with no clothes on. And I had to deal with that somehow. You can imagine what happens. I mean, you see? So he said, therefore, I am absolutely careful that there's Caesar's wife must be above suspicion. Srila Prabhupada says this English thing quite often throughout his books. He said, I'm very careful that in my personal activities, I leave absolutely no room for any untoward occurrence. You see? And this is a Christian man. But look at his track record. Very successful, very highly respected, because he followed these principles. These are our principles. You see? So we have to, you know, particularly this is a bigger problem among the Western membership of ISKCON, have to get a deeper appreciation of why these standards exist. Srila Prabhupada, the famous example is, what is that? One should not sit with one's mother, sister, or daughter. Vidvansam abhikarshati. Even a learned man. You may think, well, the low-class people, okay, it's understood. No. Even a learned man. Okay? Because man is like butter, woman is like fire. You put them together, he's going to melt. Zarur. You have a question?
Some people to whom this Prabhupada book is distributed, so when they read, they find it repetitive. They say,
yes.
What we can...
Yeah, very good point. This is a very good point. His point is that people read Prabhupada's books and they say, these books are so repetitive. I'm reading the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. It's true. In exactly the same way that you have to question, why do we have our strict social standards? You also should question, why are Prabhupada's books so repetitive? Srila Prabhupada actually suggested that we should begin these Bhakti Shastri courses that are now ubiquitous throughout the world. But he did not give any detail at all about that. What I've observed from my personal experience is that the persons who did begin to implement those instructions on teaching his books in an academic format, they adopted Western academic paradigms of doing so, including Western pedagogical paradigms. That means Western modes of teaching as opposed to traditional modes of teaching. There was a nice book published some years ago by Bhakti Raghava Swami on traditional Vedic education. You can find it somewhere, at least among his followers. It's a good, a very interesting book. But my sense, based not only on my experience of Krishna consciousness, but with my experience of how traditional Indian wisdom is taught traditionally, at least in music, it's still like this. You're not going to be given anything systematically. You're not going to get an overview. You're not going to get any means by which you can conquer this knowledge. Because the assumption at the very outset is that knowledge is not something that is conquered. Knowledge is something that conquers you. And it's a gift coming from, descending from above. It's not something that you can tackle. You see? And the repetition is built into that traditional system of imparting knowledge. You have to say the same thing again and again and again. And you have to see the same thing again and again and again. And then it sinks in, for one thing. But even deeper than that, there's another principle operating here. Throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, you see, for example, Dehi no sminyata dehi kaumaram. This verse will be quoted in full, sometimes even twice in the same purport. Yesterday we had this. The same verse was quoted twice in the same purport. The result of this is that when you read all of Prabhupada's books, you are automatically indoctrinated with a sense of what is important. Because it is the verses that appear most common that Prabhupada wants us to assimilate. I give this analogy. Just like when you're in school, the teacher writes something on the board, and if she writes it twice on the board, three times on the board, you have to understand this is very important. So similarly, Shastra, when it repeats things like this, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Iva Kiva, three times, no? These are the important things. And you can't get that just by looking at an overview or just, you know, making an empirical, statistical analysis of what's... You see? You have to be trained. And in addition to that kind of repetitive training, you say parrot-like chanting, in the beginning it's like that. Children. When children first go to school, we don't try to teach them anything of importance. We give them shlokas, and they memorize those shlokas. What shlokas do we give children? Traditionally, what kind of shlokas? Here you have Prati Tirukula, right? Otherwise, we give them hitopadesh, basic things that they don't know what it means now, but it's in their head. And when they're 25 years old, they will remember. And then when they're mature enough to actually gain insight from it, then they appreciate that my parents gave me the right training. Because now they're able to make decisions. What is the purpose of education? Prabhupada said, to form character. Shila. Shila Acharanam. This is it. So, especially these Subhashitas and Hitopadesh, Dharma Shastras, this kind of thing is very beneficial. But my point is different. My point is that Prabhupada is emphasizing certain key things again and again and again. Not only because that process, by its very nature, purifies the heart. It's punya shravana kirtanam, to vibrate auspicious sounds. But also because the repetition of a thing is necessary in order that the subject matter be thoroughly understood. Srila Prabhupada writes in one of his Bhagavad Gita purports. So yes, it's a little repetitive. What's not repetitive? The insights that you bring to that process. By learning the shlokas, by applying those shlokas, you get your insights. That comes out in class. That's why nobody, you know, people get interested when there's a good class. Because it's vidyavadhu jivanam. You see? Knowledge is static. Knowledge alone is static, but applied knowledge becomes dynamic. Who asked a question now? I don't know. Oh yeah, you asked. Okay. Does that answer the question? Okay? All right, so what's up now? It's too late. So, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.